They're all better now. Too many buttons. Decided not to fold space and is thus remaining Sparky, not Man Cave. Okay, so sorry about the absence of White Rose Society. I spoke too soon. Now we're streaming live to all of those different places all over the planet and far out into the frozen reaches of the vacuum of deep space. Yes. Thanks for the reminder, Marty. I got an email from Marty going, did you throw the third switch? Well, yes, I did. Well, no, I didn't. But I have now. So it's a real live, honest-to-goodness radio broadcast. And, well, the first thing we do on these real live, honest-to-goodness professional radio broadcasts is we thank we thank our subscribers. Yes, we absolutely do. We have two subscribers for this day. We have Gary out in Oregon. Thank you, Gary. And we have Scott in Florida. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Gary. And that's those are our two subscribers for the day. Thank you very, very kindly. You are partial sponsors of the evening's broadcast and, of course, every broadcast month on the Horn. And I do have... I've got thanks to send out to Carl and Jerry. Carl and Jerry just became Patreon subscribers. Thank you. So that let's see. If everything stays on track, we are just a few dollars away over at Patreon from having one full broadcast day taken care of. And that's a big deal. So thank you very kindly to both of you for jumping in and becoming Patreon subscribers. It's real easy. Just go over to patreon.com/Bob Kincaid and sign up for $10 a month, or, well, you know, Mr. Soros. That would just be insulting to ask you to sign up for just $10 a month. What do you say you sign up for $1,000 a month, Mr. Soros? And no, you know what? Make it 10,000. Then we'll start hiring people here. And oh well, never mind. You know how that goes. Have I done something else wrong already at the beginning of the program? Okay, now that you've thrown the third switch, getting you on the Haiku MP3 stream 5x5. Okay, good. So I haven't done something else wrong. Beautiful. It's another brisk evening in the fabulous Horn Mansion Studios. I've managed with the aid of a bottle of gas to get the temperature up all the way to 57 degrees in here. But, you know, layering is a good thing. And so I got warm feet courtesy of some hardworking Australian. All layered up, absolutely should be good for 3 hours of radio. And of course, it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and we try to raise $200 every evening. And big thanks go out to Chris in Germany for finishing off the rest of Bob's challenge from last night. Thank you so much, Chris. That is a big deal indeed not to have a deficit this evening. So, hey, here's an ambitious goal. Let's have deficit-free radio for the rest of the week. So if we do $200 this evening, we won't have a deficit for prayer meeting Wednesday. Could we do that? 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, and we'll round up from that half penny from 12 and a half to 13 cents, and we'll put that half penny into the fund, and it'll go to new wiper blades on the Gulfstream 5. Okay, yeah. Of course, we've also got. I need to tell you about the latest arrival from the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists down at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, I'm talking about the first blush of spring. I'm talking about Roustabout Redbud. Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is just what you'll need to get you up and running as the cold weather of winter gives way to the cold weather of spring. The first blush of spring comes to Appalachia in the form of the redbud tree, which puts out beautiful, beautiful, brilliant pink flowers before just about anything else is getting green. Nature's first green is pink in Appalachia, and that's why we're proud to offer a concocted decoction, a tincture, in fact, that's been freeze-dried and hand-selected and proprietarily blended by artisanal blenders to create Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. And by Jove, it is exactly what you need. And of course, if you order up now and order a 90-day supply of Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, well, by Jove, we'll send you a 90-pack of credulity strips so that instead of having to swallow the Roustabout Redbud capsules, well, you'll be able to just open one and stick the little strip in it and find out that, yes, what we've known all along and told you all along is in fact true, that Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is just another bullshit nutritional supplement with no nutritional value whatsoever, just like all the other nutritional supplements offered for sale by people on the radio. Because you can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness professional radio program unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle to the people who are simple enough to buy nutritional supplements from somebody on the radio. Roustabout Redbud, it's cage-free, gluten-free, cruelty-free, vegan, GMO-free, free-range, soy-free, and in fact, Redbud-free. You won't find it anywhere else. Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, indeed. Post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, that side down, FOB, COD, RED, BUD. Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. I've never cared much for Redbud, at least not to eat it or swallow it or tincture it or anything. But thanks to Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, I get all the Redbud goodness that I never, ever wanted. Yes, indeed. So order yours today for a 90-day supply. Only $319.76, because the Redbuds haven't bloomed yet, because we're all covered up with snow here in Appalachia right now. You see how it works? Yes, indeed. Roustabout Redbud from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And there we go. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and I tell you what, it's been a busy day in Lake Trump be gone. Let's leave that alone. But no, it has been. The little man has had a busy, busy day. No, Head On Radio, no, that account's not been suspended. The Head On Radio Network opens up just fine. For some reason or another, the connection to the chat room has fallen apart for some reason. I got nothing. Nice hot decaf. Yay. I prefer the Kroger Private Selection 100% Colombian decaf. It's almost like drinking coffee. No, you wake up in the morning, you get your first cup of decaf going, and it kind of, you wind the cat and put out the clock, there I was just checking the morning's news, and bang, suddenly, we don't have a Secretary of State anymore. And what a mess this is turning out to be. I've never much cared for Rex Tillerson. No, I'm sorry, that's a different pitch. There was something kind of icky about having a Secretary of State who'd been decorated with the Medal of Freedom and Dedication to Mother Russia for all of his work opening up oil fields in Russia. Maybe call that the Pappy Coke Memorial Medal or something. Make it at least it would have some historical context. But no, I wasn't a big fan of Rex on Tillerson, but I do give the guy credit for at least once in his life telling the truth, and that being when he noted that the guy who's in the White House right now, Mango Mussolini, that he's a fucking moron. That's going to be Rexxon Tillerson's claim to fame. The guy who noted that his boss was a fucking moron. Yes. And so for that, at least, I can muster up a soupçon of respect. But he's gone. He didn't know he was gone. In fact, he found out he was gone while he was, like, maybe coming home from a visit to several different countries in Africa, a trip that got cut short because he wasn't feeling so good, so he decided not to go to Kenya after all. But basically, he found out on Twitter that he wasn't Secretary of State anymore. Now, it's entirely coincidental that prior to finding out he... And I guess this is a thing now. For somebody who made a career out of being on a bullshit television show, did they have bullshit nutritional supplements to advertise on that bullshit television? I don't know. Never watched it. But Geezer Disgust Us has developed a habit of firing people when they're traveling on government aircraft somewhere else, so that apparently they can't get to him and, like, punch him in the face or something that he, you know, richly deserves, they think he richly deserves or something, right? So there were lies and non-truths and half-truths from the very beginning, as it was put out that, well, you know, they discussed this on Friday and Secretary Tillerson knew he was on his way out. But then again, no. Because the conflicts began to appear almost immediately. One report so far pointing out that Chief of Staff John Kelly asked Rexxon Tillerson to resign, and Tillerson said, nope, not going to do it. Going to make the little bastard own it himself. And so, in what can only be described as a first for the Republic, one of the most senior cabinet appointments out there got fired on Twitter. Zeke Miller at the Associated Press reported that John Kelly had asked Rexxon Tillerson to throw himself on his sword. And maybe that's because Rex Tillerson felt like he deserved to be personally canned by the president. Or maybe it's because you really can't tell who's in charge, the inmates are running the asylum. And what John Kelly says is not necessarily what the president wants. Zeke Miller at AP said that Kelly called Tillerson Friday and again on Saturday and warned him that Trump was about to take action if he didn't step aside, and Tillerson didn't step aside. And so this morning, at about 8:45, we got a tweet saying that Mike Pompeo was going to be his new Secretary of State, and thanking Tillerson for his service, not even actually using his trademark line, "You fired." No, So, go figure. Well, damn, that's weird. Thanks, Lee, for letting me know. Maybe I misunderstood Anatole a minute ago. This account's been suspended. I don't know why. Jesus Christ. Well, you know, another thing to think about. Because I live a life of indolent boredom. oh, fun with language. Thank you. Thank you, Earther. Soy free? Eris free, Bob? Yeah. I'm sorry. Si, soy free. Free como una paloma blanca. Muy blanca. Right? But this is interesting because the Tillerson firing set up the nomination, which was apparently ready to go, of Mike Pompeo, who, interestingly enough, we were repeatedly told by the for-profit media over the course of the day, graduated first in his class at West Point. This is not so much a recommendation of the intellect of Mike Pompeo so much as an indication of the depth to which the intellectual and scholastic rigor of the United States Military Academy had apparently sunken back when Mike Pompeo was going to West Point. Because Mike Pompeo is, of course, a raving religious lunatic. He's also, in case you were wondering, the one man who has received more money from the Koch brothers than any other politician in the whole new United States of America. Which just astonishes the when you consider how much they've given and pumped out. And so he's a suck-up and a phony intellectual and... Well, he hasn't said out loud whether he hears voices, too, just like, just like Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek. But, you know, there's a good chance. Who knows? At the Senate confirmation hearings, maybe he'll break out in some tongue-speaking or some floor-rolling or some prophesying. Maybe he'll juggle a snake or drink some strychnine. Hard to know. But the most important thing to note about Mike Pompeo is that he is a complete suck-up. Speaking outside somewhere today, answering a few questions, Marcus Aurelius declared, "The great thing about Mike Pompeo is that we always agree on everything. We're totally in simpatico," or some such spirochete-driven madness. And it never dawns on the Carotene Caligula that maybe somebody is agreeing with him not because he's right, but because they want something, or they lust for power. No, that couldn't possibly be the case now, could it? But those weren't the only folks. That wasn't the only, Tillerson's out at State. Pompeo is out at the CIA. What about the CIA then? Who's going to run the CIA? Well, no one is as sensitive to ideas of inclusion as Geezer Disgustus is. He recognizes the importance of elevating women into positions of executive power. So now, assuming her confirmation goes through, the CIA will have its first ever female director in the form of Gina Haspel. H-A-S-P-E-L. Gina Haspel. She's a career CIA employee. In fact, she's really dedicated to the CIA. She's so dedicated to the CIA, in fact, that back in 2002, she ran one of the black sites, so-called, the one in Thailand, where she made sure that we tortured terrorism suspects a whole lot. Back in the day, regardless of what you think of his reporting now, and I generally don't think much of it, but back in the day, Glenn Greenwald, this was before he got on Julian Assange's and others' backs and rode them to fame and fortune, but Glenn Greenwald did some damn fine reporting on the CIA, the Bush administration, and torture. And yes, Gina Haspel, as reported by Glenn Greenwald, was such an enthusiastic director of that black site in Thailand that she actually participated in the torture of Abu Zubaydah. That's who's going to be the director of the CIA, assuming that she is confirmed by the Senate. Oh, and by the way, there was that other little thingamajig where she destroyed evidence. Because, see, the CIA was so enamored of itself for torturing people outside the law of the United States and without regard to human rights or human dignity or anything that is generally agreed to among the community of nations. The CIA was so into it that they made their own little torture porn tapes. Yeah, they videoed them. They videoed waterboarding. They videoed sleep deprivation. They videoed, the brutalities to which Abu Zubaydah and others were subjected. There's even a Wikipedia entry on the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah. Nasty stuff, referred to back during the Reign of Error as enhanced interrogation techniques. This is where those two psychologists were brought in, James Elmer Mitchell and Bruce Jessen. And waterboarding, sleep deprivation, isolation, exposure to extreme temperatures, enclosure in tiny spaces, bombardment with agonizing sounds at extremely damaging decibel levels. At one point in time, you remember the report that we were torturing people in Guantanamo by playing the Barney theme song really, really loud at them? Their goal was to treat Abu Zubaydah like a dog in a cage. That's a quote. So, and that, you know, that's the sick part. Gina Haspel was an eager participant in all of that. And then when it came to, out that there were videotapes of it all, somebody higher up said, we got to destroy those tapes. Because those tapes were, what? Yes, evidence of crimes. And Gina Haspel said, yes, sir, and destroyed evidence. And was never even tried for it. Wasn't even charged with a crime. The CIA said it performed an internal review and was satisfied that what she did was okay by them. That's who's going to be the new director of the CIA, assuming that she is confirmed by the Senate. This, of course, should be cause for some degree of alarm, because it's a sort of a red flag that torture is going to be a big thing again. Ron Wyden of Oregon asked about her nomination, said Ms. Haspel's background makes her unsuitable to serve as CIA director. Her nomination must include total transparency about this background, which I called for more than a year ago when she was appointed deputy director. If Ms. Haspel seeks to serve at the highest levels of U.S. intelligence, the government can no longer cover up disturbing facts from her past. What a lovely sentiment that is. It almost sounds like something that a real live, no kidding, honest to goodness, functioning Senate might insist upon. There's only one hitch. We ain't got one of those. No, we have a Senate that's run by chinless Mitch McConnell, and which has a bunch of lockstep Republicans. Now, with John McCain not really too terribly present in the Senate these days and not voting on stuff, that means that there's a good chance that you could wind up with a 50-50 split on her on the floor vote of her nomination. Well, then, of course, the voice of Jesus would appear, would be heard inside the noggin of Mike Pence, and we may all presume that the Vice President of the United States serving as President of the Senate, having hallucinated the voice of someone he'd never heard in his entire life. I mean, does Jesus identify himself to Mike Pence? Or did he ever? Mike Pence. Wait, we're going to need reverb for this. Mike Pence. Michael Pence. Who is that? Who do you think it is, dumbass? It's Jesus. Who else talks inside your head? Are you talking to other deities that I don't know about, Michael? No, Lord. It's really you? Of course it's really me. Okay, Lord, what do you want me to do? I want you to break the tie and make sure that the lady who tortures people gets to be director of the CIA. Cool bunch of guys, those CIA and guys and women. I haven't seen anybody quite so vicious and brutal since the guy who nailed me to the cross. And that's saying something, Michael. I love me some torture. That's why I didn't use my magic Jesus powers to get down off the cross. Torture's cool, Michael. We love torture, Michael. Make sure the torture lady gets to be director of the CIA, Michael. And then, of course, he'll cast the tie-breaking, deciding vote, and the lady who tortures people will become the director of the CIA. In the name of Jesus! Because everything this government does is in the name of Jeebus. because this is a Christian government. I mean, and so I know it's almost impossible to contemplate, but that's my job here. I have to think about improbable things. Is there some way that maybe we could not have a CIA director who was actively involved in the destruction of evidence and the torture, the extra legal torture of human beings? Well, two things would have to happen. One, Chuck Schumer would have to make sure that every Democrat voted the right way. That is, against the woman who sanctioned torture. This is no small feat in a Democratic Senate caucus that includes the likes of Joe Manchin, who can't even be bothered to do anything about the poisoning of his own constituents by the people who own him, namely the coal industry. And Heidi Heitkamp, out there in North Dakota, who really finds the idea of she likes that D behind her name, but the idea of actually voting like one, it makes her want to flow up. Or Joe Donnelly in Indiana, who has all the Democratic bona fides of, Warren Gamaliel Harding. So that's kind of what you're up against on the Democratic side. I guess it could happen. But then, if you had every Democrat in line, you'd still have to get to the point where you had 51 votes so that there couldn't be a tie. So that means you're going to have to find two Republicans who don't approve of torture. This is one of those moments where it might be or might not be handy to have John McCain around, because he could maybe get all mavericky and say, gosh, I remember when I was tortured. I don't think anybody should be tortured, and, you know, vote against the torture lady. 50. Now we got to find one more. And this becomes that, was it Demosthenes? The search for one righteous, one wise man. Maybe not. Okay, who is the guy with the lamp? I can never remember. Diogenes. There he is. There he is. Diogenes was a smart ass. He carried a lamp around to say he was looking for one wise man. Great guy. Honest man. Sorry, honest man. So we'd have to find, Chuck Schumer would have to get his lamp out and get all Diogenes and go wandering around through the Republican caucus looking for, you know, one honest man who would speak up against torture and vote not to confer. But we don't have McCain anyway, so that means we got to find two. And you got to keep Doug Jones in the boat, too, over on the Democratic side. That might not be too easy. He's shown a predilection for voting with the Republicans as well. So, you know, who might that be? Oh, I know. How about much vaunted Senate moderate Republican Susan Collins? Don't bet the farm on it. That woman votes with the Republican majority and does what she's told when she's told 9 times out of 10. I know. How about Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist? Nah. His values don't extend that far. Ooh. What about different kind of Republican Ben Sasse of Nebraska? Nah, when the rubber meets the road, he'd just as soon say, nah, hook the diehard up to his nuts and with the jumper cables and let's see what happens. They don't call them jumper cables for nothing now, do they? But still, the confirmation hearings might be interesting. And there's, there's talk of getting rid of the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs and replacing him with the Secretary of Energy. That would be Rick Perry, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah. He could dance for our wounded veterans. Wouldn't that be exciting? So we've got a cabinet mess. You could call it a mess, but it smells a lot more like, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, a purge. A Stalinist purge. Because, once again, let's do remember that the only reason, it appears, that the only reason Rexon Tillerson got the boot was because he agreed wholeheartedly with the fact that it was some dirty damn business for Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, cuddly, snuggly, pooty poot, to try to poison a couple of emigres to the United Kingdom years and years and years after the fact, after being swapped out for some spies that they had in the United States. Yeah? Because that's a thing that happened. That really went on. Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, stood up and said, our scientists have said that it is almost for certain that Russia had Sergei Skripal and his daughter poisoned with a nerve agent that, well, we know the Russians were manufacturing. Now, I'm sure out there somewhere, precious Caitlin Johnstone is banging away some sort of a blog post saying that that couldn't possibly ever have happened, and by God, haven't the British done some awful things somewhere along the way, and... Yeah, right. But the fact remains that there seems to be a certain amount of consensus that, yes, the Russians are out there poisoning people in the UK again. And Rexon, and in former times, it would not have been a big deal for a member of the cabinet to step out and say, yes, we agree with the scientific findings of our friends in the UK. But that was then, not now. And that was enough to make the other shoe drop for Tangerine Tiberius. Who, when asked about it this morning, said, well, we'll try to find out who it was. We'll condemn them if it was the Russians or whoever. Or somebody else. Why is this guy? And of course, this is the $64 question. Why can this guy never, ever conceive of the idea that Russia might be engaging in a little bit of the stuff that Russia has about a 100-year history of engaging in. And then from the Department of, oh, by the way, you ever heard of a guy named Nikolai Glushkov? Well, if you haven't, you're not going to hear of him doing anything more, because he's dead. Granted, Nikolai Glushkov was 69 years old. On the other hand, the Metropolitan Police of London say that Nikolai Glushkov's death is being treated as an unexplained. It's noteworthy that counterterrorism officers are leading the investigation as a precaution because of associations that the man is believed to have had. Well, what those associations were was that he was close with a Russian oligarch by the name of Boris Berezovsky. And he was a happy little billionaire before he publicly denounced sweet, cuddly, lovable Pootie Poot. Well, Nikolai Glushkov had worked for a company owned by Berezovsky. Then again, Berezovsky's also bosom buddies with Alexander Litvinenko. Alexander Litvinenko got all dead in 2006 from a little dose of polonium. It's already well established that that murder was authorized by sweet, lovable, cuddly, wouldn't hurt a fly, but, you know, doesn't mind much when the homosexual population of Mother Russia and journalists and stuff get killed. You know, Pootie. Berezovsky sold out everything he had in Russia and went to live in London. This was after they used the pretext of an investigation of management of the Russian state airline Aeroflot, which he and Nikolai Glushkov had more or less managed. Glushkov was a senior executive at Aeroflot in the 1990s. Berezovsky, Boris Berezovsky, he got all dead in 2013, with his body found in a locked bathroom and a rope around his neck. And everything. Well, by Jove, it appears he's taken his own life. Nikolai Glushkov, on the other hand, said, Boris was strangled. Either he did it himself or with the help of someone. I don't believe it was suicide. Then there's Roman Abramovich. Glushkov had testified in court against him. Roman Abramovich is, again, a near and dear pal of sweet, lovable, cuddly, wouldn't hurt a flea, Pootie Poot. And Roman Abramovich also owns the Chelsea Football Club in the UK, part of the Premier League. This was just reported today. It's almost like Pootie has been watching The Godfather with subtitles or something, and is sitting in his dasha saying, "I do deny them. Do you deny the devil and all his works? I do deny them." And all told, there's like 14 dead Russians who all just seem to meet untimely ends and happen to all share in common the fact that they have run afoul of Pootie Poot. Now, is it surprising that the Russians would do this? Not to anybody who knows their history. Let's check in with Leon Trotsky back in 1940 in Mexico City. Oh, we can't. He was beaten to death with a hammer. So there's that. So Rexon Tillerson says we agree with our friends in the UK, and the next thing you know, he's not Secretary of State anymore. Which all sort of leads me to a note that I got from Steve in New York, a member of the fraternity of Steve, and remember, henceforward, all Steves may take credit for anything one Steve says if they wish. Steve wrote earlier and said, "You and I have said we are already in a constitutional crisis. For those who said we weren't yet, I don't think there's any doubt. The poisoning of the two in the UK, the firing of Tillerson, who expressed solidarity, support with the UK, the firing of the guy who contradicted the Saffron Stalin's reasons for firing Tillerson, because he got canned too. The spokesman over at the Department of State who contradicted the White House, yeah, he's out of a job this evening as well. Like I said, the Nectarine Nero has had a busy day. All leave it without a doubt. Perhaps this is wishful thinking, but for some reason these developments feel like they've seriously ratcheted up the situation, and I sense a boiling point. One of my favorite shows, MASH, had this line. The Chinese attacked and broke through the supply lines with 300,000 troops. That's 33 divisions. We're looking at a whole new ball game. Again, perhaps I'm overreacting, but it really feels to me like a whole new ball game. There's desperation here that feels like a tapped well about to blow. Signed, Steve. Yeah, it feels a little suspenseful. I mean, this is really beginning to resemble any number of plots from the TV series that we once enjoyed watching because, well, that's not how it really happens, and it couldn't possibly happen that way, so we can get a little schadenfreude and a little catharsis here and then go back into the real world. No longer. No longer. Meanwhile, Gina Haspel will be investigated by the International Criminal Court for her having been linked to black sites in Afghanistan. A German watchdog group has also argued in favor of the idea that prosecutors should indict her for her role in torture. The ACLU is something less than happy. Gina Haspel was a central figure in one of the most illegal and shameful chapters in modern American history. She was up to her eyeballs in torture, both in running a secret torture prison in Thailand and carrying out an order to cover up torture crimes by destroying videotapes. One man held at the secret prison she ran was waterboarded 83 times, slammed against walls, sleep-deprived, and locked in a coffin-like box. Because freedom! But we've already been over that. One other person is looking for work this evening. And that is the personal assistant to Donald J. Trump. Just quietly sort of defenestrated earlier today. Probably wouldn't mean much if it weren't for the fact that he may know things, as the saying goes. I mean, this is just sort of bizarre. We're talking here about, none of us have probably ever even heard of this cat. His name is John McEntee. He is described in various reports as the longtime personal aide to Donald Trump. How bad is it over there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? Well, he was canned because, as CNN reports, he is currently under investigation by the Department of Homeland Security for serious financial crimes. Okay. How bad is it? This isn't even part of anything that Bob Mueller's doing. This is Homeland Security doing its own work. The anonymous source who spoke to CNN said the charges are not related to the president. He was escorted out of the White House yesterday. When the story was initially reported, it was said to be related to his security clearance. On the other hand, a different source contradicted that, saying, no, he'd been given a permanent security clearance, but then he was sacked. Yeah, meanwhile, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags said, "We don't comment on security clearances or personnel issues." Here's the fun part, though. As CNN notes, McEntee was one of few aides who did not have their access to the president limited when John Kelly became the chief of staff last fall. He was a near constant presence in the West Wing and was one of a select group of staffers who were often summoned by the president to the White House residence. He regularly traveled with Trump and was seen boarding Marine One on the South Lawn of the White House as Trump headed for Pennsylvania this past Saturday for that really big, weird rally. And he was even scheduled to go today with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini on his little trip to San Diego, but he was abruptly fired. Oddly enough, there was no tweet about thanking him for his service. As described in the CNN article, he was what is referred to as Trump's body man. He goes and does and stays right by Donald Trump. And, wow, I wonder if those charges of serious financial crimes might make him maybe want to go to one of the last remaining payphones in Washington, D.C. and drop a quarter in and jingle up Bob Mueller. Yeah, Steve, it feels a little pressure cookery. It really does. John out on the road somewhere said, "Don't forget Trump's aide, since the campaign was fired this morning and escorted out, fired yesterday." Albert from Rhode Island says, "Bob, Leon Trotsky was killed when a mountain climber's ice axe accidentally hit him in the head. In Mexico. Ice axe. Yes. You get a jingle for that, Albert. Darlene in Connecticut writes in, subject line poison and the weekly address. Funny how Trump can conceive of himself being poisoned, and hence the Mickey D's nightly binge. Oh, no more, they're making him eat fish and salad. And he's not happy about it, Clarity just pointed out. Trump is being a bitch on a diet? I wouldn't want that job personal assistant to the orange man. No. Yeah. By the way, has that douche canoe idiot squatting in the White House masquerading as president ever done a president's weekly address? As I recall, President Obama was pretty good at doing those. I think even W was, too. I remember that was a big part of the weekend work way back in the day at CNN when the radio address would come out and one of your readers in a five-minute news top-of-the-hour newscast would be, in his weekly radio address today, President Reagan said. Mm-hmm. I don't recall hearing anything about what Trump said in his weekly radio address. Maybe he doesn't do weekly radio addresses because he can't stick to the script. I don't know. That's a good point, Darlene. Randy in PA says, I may be cynical, but you don't fire Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson fires you. The handwriting was on the wall for Rexon ever since he referred to him as a fucking moron and then didn't deny having said it. He's been begging to be fired. It's like those Budweiser lizards from years past. Budweiser. Oh, Louie, you're begging for a pink slip. Oh, Rexon, you're begging for a pink slip. But he's had a busy, busy day. So do you reckon? Okay, let's get all paranoid. One, what if this really? What if Rexon Tillerson knew that by sticking up for our special relationship friends over in the UK and saying that he trusted their judgment on whether or not Sergei Skripal and his daughter were poisoned, what if he knew that that would cause him to get canned? What if he wanted, really did, what if he said, I'm not going to quit, I'm not going to be accused of running away, I'm going to make him fire me. What if that was the case? Is there some game working out there? What if John McEntee gets hauled out of the White House because he's been wearing a wire for months, and the Homeland Security investigation is a smokescreen? What if he left the White House and didn't even have to go and find one of the last remaining payphones in Washington, D.C., and instead just sauntered down Pennsylvania Avenue and said, "Why, Bob Mueller, imagine seeing you here." There's a lot of crap at work in all of this. Oh, and then there's the one other little thingy. And that is how Rexon said goodbye. No, I'm not gonna fire up Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli. That's too pretty a song for such a tawdry story. But it was noteworthy to anybody who watched it, and I did, that Rexon stepped up to the podium and delivered a valedictory at the State Department. And you know, if you're leaving under any sort of decent terms, you say something like, "And I want to thank President Trump for giving me the opportunity to serve the people of the United States in such a position of high trust, and I will forever be honored that I had that opportunity. Speech writing boilerplate 101. Instead, Rexon made his entire speech and never once said the word Trump. On the other hand, he said things like how important it is that we treat each other with honesty and integrity, and we have respect for one another, and that there's accountability. He said he was proud of how the State Department, under his leadership, had addressed issues of sexual harassment. He got a little weepy and said, well, not weepy, but we all took our oath of office, whether you're a career employee or political appointee, we're all bound by that commitment to support and defend the Constitution, to bear truth, faith, and allegiance to the same. As far as the business of the Department of State itself, he tapped on the tack with his little hammer a couple more times and said, much work remains to respond to the troubling behavior and actions on the part of the Russian government. Russia must assess carefully as to how their actions are in the best interest of the Russian people and the world more broadly. In other words, I'm going to keep talking about Russia, you stupid. And now that you fired me, there's nothing you can do about it. What are you going to do? Have Putin's boys poison me? Well, Rexon, my only advice is stay away from people with umbrellas. Don't drink from any strange cups. Don't go into any locked bathrooms that have ropes in them. Avoid polonium at all costs, and try not to ingest any nerve agents and stay off small aircraft. Did I mention stay off small? Yes. And rowboats. Stay out of rowboats. He's had a busy, busy day. And one wonders if anybody's going to want to have a little conversation with him. Hey, Rexon's dangerous now. He could actually own up. He won't. It's just political masturbatory fantasizing. But he could come out and say, yeah, I called him a fucking moron because he's a fucking moron. It would be fun, wouldn't it? We're not going to count on that happening. Interesting question coming from Scott and Punky. Is Trump attempting to 25th Amendment proof his cabinet? Well, we will know if Mad Dog Mattis starts feeling the pressure. Oh, by the way, I've got a correction to make. In the discussion last night about Joy Behar having to apologize, I suggested she was Jewish. I was wrong. She is mainline, generations deep Roman Catholic. We regret the error. But then again, you got to remember that where Mike Pencil Neck Geek and the evangelicals who follow him are concerned, that just makes her a Mary worshiper and an idol worshiper and a follower of the whore of Babylon and all the things that evangelical Protestants say about the Roman Catholic Church. So, error corrected, but I stand by the remainder of my opinions on that matter. And her phone call to Mike Pencil Neck Geek was apparently not enough, and she was compelled to give an on-air apology for telling the truth. Joy, you've got to Got a standing invite to just jingle up the program here, and it's just us and a little tiny community of people who won't tell on you or anything. And we can talk about the fact that if you're hearing voices, it's probably a sign of mental illness. But, well, yeah. So that's pretty much the filibobster for this Titanic Tuesday. Pretty Titanic, I'd say, wouldn't you? Want to engage in conversation? Lines are open, 304-574-8178. We loves us some first-time callers or haven't called in a long-time callers. You're more than welcome to jump in. Toll-free if you need us to pay the freight on the phone call. That's 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. And, of course, from anywhere on planet Earth, there's Skype. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And that's where it all, and that's how we make this conversation radio. I looked at all the stuff going on today. It's just so hard to imagine Geezer Disgustus having enough presence of mind to accomplish everything that's been accomplished in the last couple of days. And consequently, it has to have been an exhausting day for him. And then to have to go all the way to San Diego to look at his wall prototypes, he's got to be exhausted. And that made me think of, because there's... Maybe that's how it's supposed to work out. There's always a cartoon reference from the glorious golden era of Warner Brothers animation. And I got to thinking of one in particular. Uh, 1954. It's called Wild Wife. And way, 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 way back in 1954, they were actually making cartoons about male chauvinism. And Wild Wife features a woman who, responding to her husband's complaint that she didn't get anything done that day, details the minutia of her harried existence. You know, all in about 6.5 minutes. And it ends with her whacking her husband over the head with a rolling pin lettered his, at which point she delivers this line.
Little man, I've had a busy day.
Which in turn is a play on a famous song of a previous era, which is what I thought of when I thought of Geezer Disgustus out there having to do all that president. And so we'll do a little time travel here with a long-distance dedication for Geezer Disgustus. Henry Hall. Author of Little Man, You've Had a Busy Day. A long-distance dedication going out to the 71-year-old toddler in the White House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, probably now taking a nap as he heads for his What, he's got a Clavering rally out there. Anyway, here it is. Little man, you've had a busy day.
Evening breezes sighing, moon is in the sky. Little man, it's time for bed. Daddy's little hero is tired and wants to cry. Now come along and rest your weary head. Little man, you're crying. I know why you're blue. Someone took your kitty car away. Time to go to sleep now. Little man, you've had a busy day. Johnny won your marbles. Tell you what we'll do. Dad'll get some new ones right away. Time to go to sleep now. Little man, you've had a busy day. You've been playing soldiers. The battle has been won. The enemy is out of sight. Come along there, soldier. Put away your gun. The war is over for tonight. Time to stop your scheming. Time your day was through. Can't you hear the bugles softly say? Time you should be dreaming. Little man, you've had a busy day. You're bound for Blanket Bay. The Isle of Dreams is now in sight. Come along there, sailor. Now you must away. God bless you, darling, and good night. All your little troubles are forgotten. And you'll soon be dreaming, little man, you've had a busy day.
It's Tuesday, March 13, 2018.
Even if you take the highest possible estimate of costs and the lowest possible estimate of benefits, benefits are still well over double what the costs were.
Trump doesn't want you to know his own report shows the benefits of environmental regulations far outweigh the costs. Colorado Republicans kill bill prioritizing public health in oil and gas development. Interior Secretary pulls lands in his own state from oil and gas auction. Plus,
it's just one after the other.
The third major storm in the Northeast in 10 days underscores the need to invest in electric grid resilience.
All of those needs and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And we have 4 to 9 inches of global warming hoax piling up outside. Thanks, China.
Yep, thanks. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess it's not unheard of, but man, this is the third nor'easter about to hit the East Coast in, what, A week or two?
Yes, in less than 2 weeks. And that is likely to bring even more power outages, even as hundreds of thousands of customers already remain without electricity after the previous two storms. Back-to-back storms, as you mentioned, are rare but not unheard of for the region. But the impacts, with little time for recovery in between, underscore what climate scientists have been warning about for years. Because of the documented increase in heavy precipitation events in the United States since 1950, we need to invest in infrastructure, like the electric grid. It needs to be hardened for resilience because of the increase in extreme weather events due to global warming.
And this isn't just back-to-back storms. This is back-to-back-to-back storms in the Northeast.
And intense ones at that.
Yep.
The benefits of regulations far outweigh their costs, as much as 7 times their cost, especially environmental regulations. That's the conclusion of a new report that was quietly released by President Trump's own Office of Management and Budget, which found that unequivocally, at a minimum, even when using the highest possible estimates of cost, major regulations like the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act return more than double their cost in benefits to the American people. According to David Roberts of Vox on a recent broadcast, Trump's rollbacks of major environmental regulations to reduce compliance costs for corporations actually amount to a pollution tax of sorts on everyday Americans.
Air quality regulations are a downward redistribution of income. That's the right way to think about them. It's taking income out of corporate pockets and putting it into the pockets of average people who have to breathe the air. And the reverse, reversing or getting rid of these regulations, is an upward income redistribution. You're taking money out of the pockets of ordinary people in the form of health costs mm-hmm. and missed work and all the rest of it, and you're putting it in the pockets of industrialists.
So as it turns out, when Donald Trump and Scott Pruitt and these guys all say cutting regulations is good for the economy, turns out they're lying, and their own report from their own administration now shows it?
Yep.
Imagine that.
Meanwhile, in Colorado, after heavy lobbying from the oil and gas industry, Republican lawmakers in the state legislature last week killed proposed legislation that would have required Colorado state regulators of the oil and gas industry to prioritize public safety and to treat protection of public health and the environment as a precondition before allowing further encroachment of drilling operations inside city limits and near homes and schools.
Well, we'd hate to do that.
In Utah, in the fight to save Bears Ears National Monument, Internal Interior Department emails obtained in a lawsuit by the New York Times show that oil and gas were the primary motivation behind the Trump administration's decision to shrink the monument. The Trump administration had claimed early last year that its so-called monument review had no predetermined outcomes, but the internal documents tell a different story, showing that long before the review was launched, Interior Department officials were primarily focused on oil and gas exploration. Native American tribes have vowed to sue over Trump's plans to cut nearly 90% of the monument in southeastern Utah. Finally, some good news, at least for folks in Montana. Speaking of Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, he has unexpectedly withdrawn more than 17,000 acres of the public's lands from consideration for an auction of leases to the oil and natural gas industry. Local and national environmental groups had tried to stop the sale, arguing drilling in these areas would harm the Yellowstone River and other sensitive regions. Zinke said that the department needed to study the area more before putting it up for auction. I'm sure it's purely coincidental that the protected lands happen to be located in Zinke's home state,
where he's planning to run for governor. So he takes all this public land out of our national park so that it can be sold, given away to oil and gas interests. But in his own home state, he protects public land from those very same oil and gas interests.
Funny that.
For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Such an anthem. 23 minutes past the hour, and, well, I haven't really mentioned it, but, gosh, we've gone through an hour and 23 minutes of the program, and I hate to say it, but we are at zero for fundraising. So we've got an hour and 36 minutes and change to change that and hopefully get it, knock it down a wee bit so that we don't have some monumental deficit going into prayer meeting Wednesday. Got $200 to raise. It would be nice if we could do that. Let's check in on the phones. Hey, it looks like we've got Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, what's going on, man?
You know, it's a great day to be a West Virginian, right?
Yeah.
I love it. I say that to people when they call and say, how's it going? And I say that, and people are taken aback by that. Well, okay, if you say so.
I'm saying, if you like microparticulates, yeah, it's great. Oh, man. I'm a little frightened, honestly, on the federal level here, you know, our country. You know, we joked about the poisonings and stuff, I don't know, last week or the week before or something like that. But
I don't think it ain't no joke.
No, it is not. That's why I'm frightened, okay? Because, you know, David K. Johnston was right. David Cage said, you know, this guy's not going to go out. He's going to have to drag him out of office. And I believe he's right. So, and the reason I'm frightened, you know, one of the reasons is that these people, man, he's shifting around these people. It's just, it's too much. Number one, you have all these peripheral people. If you look at it like an atom, you know, you got these little electrons floating around. A lot of them got kicked out, but they had access to our sensitive things. They're gone. They never had any clearances. You know, and then Kelly was supposed to clean house. You know, but he's
oh, yeah, Kelly was going to be the sane one. Instead, it turns out that, well, he's turning out to be a deeply flawed individual, isn't he, Todd? I mean, when you consider the fact that he was more than happy to have this guy who was up to his knuckles in some sort of financial crimes and under investigation by the very department that, let's not put too fine a point on this, by the very department that he had formerly been in charge of. Do you mean to tell me that he didn't know, you know, that when he came from Homeland Security to be chief of staff, are we to believe that somehow Kelly didn't know this investigation was underway?
Right. That's a kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, because either you're incompetent or you're lying, or you're not. You know, you're not being truthful to your position. That's the way I look at it.
Why? And are we to believe that the firing came about the very instant that they found out about it? How long does it take an investigation on a level like that to begin? And if, in fact, there's an investigation underway, isn't it prudent to tell the chief of staff, the guy that you've got sitting next to the president, his body man, his go-get-me-a-Coke guy, the guy who has more access to him than possibly any human being on Earth, you know, he may be dirty, which means he's maybe subject to blackmail, which maybe means he could be an assassin or something?
I'm trying not to yell. I'm trying to be nice about this shit, okay?
Now, well, no, I mean, if you got to yell, yell. But, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense.
Remember all these people. And I'm telling you, Giuliani's hooked up in this shit. That's why he's fucking gargoyle ass so quiet. But I'm sorry. But it's right. It's these little lackeys you got to look out for. But they're not going. They're young. What the fuck? They're not going to jail for them.
But I mean, when you, the reason you don't let people with criminal backgrounds around the president is because they could be dangerous to the president. I mean, this has the potential to have been, oh, I don't know, having John Wilkes Booth usher Lincoln to the theater box at Ford's Theater.
You know, Bob, I'm telling you, you know, when you described it, and just like some of these old B movies we used to see, we're like, wow, I'm glad that will never happen here, even though, you know, it's set here and everything. But I'm glad that movie won't happen here.
Yeah, that couldn't possibly happen. But boy, what a story. I mean, it's like the Manchurian candidate. It's time to play solitaire.
Stop. Everybody needs to rewatch that damn movie. I like that old black and white movie, man. I watched that a million times. And Frank Sinatra.
Well, see, okay, here's how my mind works. I looked at how nefarious Angela Lansbury was in that, and that's when I realized she was committing all the murders on Murder, She Wrote. They were all frame jobs.
All right.
She killed every victim on that entire program.
I'll be honest with you. When I was younger, I used to poo-poo black and white movies too. That's something I think some people acquire when they're older. Some people always like it. You know, it's something I acquired. But my point is this: that particular movie, for me and other people that I've talked with, because you know, you go give it coffee and stuff after you see a movie at one of these little boutique theaters. That the intensity jumps out of the screen.
I've got it for us here. Hang on a second, Todd. See if you remember this.
It's been decided that you will be dressed as a priest to help you get away in the pandemonium afterwards. Chun Jin will give you a two-piece Soviet Army sniper's rifle that fits nicely into a special bag. There's a spotlight booth that won't be in use. It's up under the roof on the 8th Avenue side of the garden.
Sitting there describing all of this with that great big Queen of Hearts card just sitting right next to her.
Angela was, because, you know, she
and
was
then,
very...
And then this.
What sort of a greeting is that at 3:30 in the morning?
It's a quarter to three, and what do you want?
I want to talk to you, Raymond.
About what?
I want to talk to you about that communist tart.
Shut up with that mother. Shut up.
You know what Jordan is? Are you out to crucify me? Are you out to crucify me?
I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't want to know. I'm going to bed.
Raymond, sit down. How would you see her? They live in New York.
I'm getting a job in New York.
You have your army service.
Next spring. I might be dead by next spring.
Raymond, if we were at war, and you were suddenly to become infatuated with the daughter of a Russian agent, wouldn't you expect me to come to you and object, and beg you to stop the entire thing before it was too late? Well, we are at war. It's a cold war. But it will get worse and worse until every man, woman, and child in this country will have to stand up and be counted. Say whether they are on the side of right and freedom or on the side of the Thomas Jordans of this country. I will go with you to Washington. Tomorrow, if you like, and I will show you documented proof that this man stands for evil.
You know, that's a great plot, but it could never actually happen here. You know, where every man, woman, and child would have to stand up. Well, never mind, that's coming from the plotter's mouth, but yes.
The thing is, I think there are a lot of people who have not been exposed to that. I mean, there's a newer version, but it's not like the original.
Not by a long shot.
So it seems like this is where we are now. It's too many people, even our attorney general. Now, I really can't take him seriously. Okay. He's all about law and order.
You're talking about Confederate, United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third?
That guy.
The Keebler Elf?
The Keebler Elf. Jerry Brown's best friend. But you know what's interesting? Maybe I'm not getting the logic right, but it seems like if he had to recuse himself because countless times he neglected to write down the Russian folks that he was in contact with, and verbally.
Well, you know, they talk funny. They just sound like Yankees. Maybe it was a Russian, maybe it was a New Yorker, or maybe it was somebody from Massachusetts.
Excuse me.
They all talk funny.
That's serious shit. That's perjury, man. I'm sorry. Now, wait a minute. If he didn't, all right. this is another dynasty doing dick. He had to. In other words, Trump is so fucking ignorant, he doesn't understand that that's the law, that the guy had to recuse himself. But the fact that he had to meant that he lied, that he's a perjurer.
Well, it's
Otherwise, he had to recuse himself.
Lying to Congress is a crime, too. Right.
So I don't know. Am I off base with this? No.
No, I think there's a file. I think there's a file in somewhere in what must obviously be a growing stack of stuff over at the Office of the Special Prosecutor. There's a file that just says Sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's in it. He's in it. He's involved. He's got exposure. And again, as we've discussed before, we don't know how many target letters are out there.
Back to the movie. This is like a movie that nobody could even write.
And look, as crooked and corrupt as Richard Nixon's and or Ronald Reagan's administrations were, they didn't have 4 or 5 guilty pleas and other outstanding indictments inside of 14 months in office, okay? It took Nixon a long time to get dirty. It even took Reagan a little while to get mired up in arms for, well, not that long, but you get the idea. The indictments weren't rolling out there as quickly as the new president's hand came off the Bible. But that's basically what happened here. This isn't a presidency, this is a criminal enterprise.
Well, that's the other frightening thing. It's like we got this seems like a convergence between kleptocracy, fascism, and just plain old bad government. I mean, look what we have left. We have military people. We got Kelly. We got Master. They've gotten rid of all the same people now. And Pompeo is one of these. He's putting in all the people who are ready to go to war. The drumbeats of war. Remember we were talking about that a couple months ago?
Yeah.
When this North Korea stuff. See, now he's got everybody in place. He's got all the war folks in place. And this is why I'm frightened. All the war folks are in place. Because Pompeo ain't... He's in line with these dominionists, just like that old nasty woman, DeVos. You know? You know, all these people are just gunned up and hyper-religious, and this is like the New Crusades or something like that. You know, I don't know what's going to happen now. I mean, pretty soon we're just going to have to wear, like, we have a choice between three things to wear, blue, black, brown. That's it. You know, this shit is coming. These people are insane. What? He really, I mean, you cannot joke about, well, maybe I should be in power the rest of my life. And that's what you were intimating, you know, about his little family dynasty. He's not joking about that. Remember, he told us he was a snake. He told us. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. He showed the world what he was. He showed the world on with wrestling and then with The Apprentice. But there's a segment of the American population who said, cool, he's going to fuck us. I hope he fucks us real good. Or not. Well, he fucks everybody, but he says he won't fuck us. Okay. That's more to the point.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens outside of Pittsburgh.
Well, I haven't even mentioned that, but yeah, that's out there this evening.
We're looking good. I mean, we got a good. The Democrats have been coming back. It seems like, but you like Democrats? You like Democrats? Okay. So, you know, hopefully this will turn out nicely. Because honestly, that's all we can do is vote, Democrat. And let me say one more thing. Since you brought it up, you know, it's a crying shame that Jill Stein gave such a bad name to bongheads. You know, just because she decided to pre-party in the car. I mean, think about it.
Oh, man, stop. I have not heard that phrase in a while, pre-party. You get it, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, for the pre-party.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, so, I mean, if you live in a city that has a really nice airport, you know what happens? Sometimes you might meet somebody, you go to hang out at a happy hour at a bar at the airport where you can watch the jets go up and down, blah, blah, blah. That's like 2%. You know, you go to the airport to pick someone up or to go somewhere. So, because she wanted the pre-party, you know, she wanted to do 5 bong hits and whatever else. And she couldn't figure out what goddamn plane to get on. I mean, come on, man. It's a stop.
Yeah, but see, Todd, it's like I said last night. We got to figure out some way to stop talking about that so that if there's any chance of having anything resembling unity going into November, we can somehow find it. I don't know how to bury the hatchet, but I gotta figure out a way to try.
Yeah, well, guess what? I heard you the other night, and you need to kind of lean more with telling people how to vote. I'm sorry, because they didn't get it right the first time. And I know it hurts. You just don't get what you want all the time, but that's the nature of the process. It's about compromise, and that's why it's not working right now. That there's no compromise. Unlike the compromise, and I don't know it's the compromise that the chief of staff talks about, and I don't regret calling him a Southie cracker, and I did that some time ago. And you know what? And he filled his shoes with the comment that I made, because he will not. Apologize, you know, to that representative. That it's obvious that he lied.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's just been blown past in by most of the media, and I'm at fault for it too. But you know, hell, there was he posted an attack on Maxine Waters the other day, Auntie Maxine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, ho-hum, okay. She's very low IQ, believe me. Maxine Waters, very low IQ. Believe me. I think there was even a believe me in there. And, he called Joke Toad a son of a bitch? Well, we're going to cry.
Sleepy-eyed Joke Toad, you know, I don't know if they're giving him, I think they're giving him some kind of, like, amphetamine or something. And he doesn't know, you know, he just doesn't know how the doctors are, guys, over there or up there.
But where's the outrage? That, you know, there's another African-American woman that he's decided to attack, but, you know, hell, he's been doing that for so long, Todd, you know. We'll just kind of not mention it anymore, because that's just Trump being Trump.
What? Okay.
You know, you do, Donnie. It's okay.
This low-class behavior, we become numb to it. And I'm telling you, and I still hear too many people in the morning on Washington Journal calling and say, God bless Donald Trump. And it's just, I'm like, what? Like, what planet are you living on?
Yeah, give him a chance. Wait, you got to do the give him a chance line. I can't do it like you do.
Just give him a chance. Give Donald Trump a chance. God, you don't want me to cry. I don't want to hurt that poor man. Everybody. And I'm telling you, Bob, okay, you need to get you a haircut, man. You can get you a shower and a haircut. I'm going to tell you right now. I don't mean that. Yo, the only reason I said that, I had some stump juice 2 days ago. Can you believe it?
Woo!
It was smooth as glass. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's scary. That's scary. It goes down real easy-like.
Man, I didn't want to drink too much of it, but it was smooth. It was smooth. But
yeah, it's just not smooth the next day. They call it pop skull for a reason. Hey, meanwhile, getting a little pushback from Marty, Todd. He said, Unity? Really? Have you seen Twitter? I think Unity got drowned during the last round of the Mueller indictments, when part of the indictment implied the Ruskies helped support Sanders in the primary.
All right,
and that's true. That did all that pissed him off something fierce. But you know, it's not. Nobody's saying that Sanders, that Bernie was actively involved. They just, it was an exploit. They exploited a weakness. And historically, whenever the United States has a disputed primary,
mm-hmm.
you exploit the weakness. I mean, look, unless I'm historically mistaken, and I don't think so, I am. Way, way, way back in 1988, Todd. You know, we were talking about Lee Atwater the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Atwater did not invent Willie Horton. Lee Atwater just took Willie Horton and ran with it. Willie Horton was an issue that was raised by another Democratic campaign during the 88 primary season. Primaries are exploitable. The Russians aren't stupid. So you gin up the anti-Hillary crowd inside her own party, and then you gin up the Republicans on the other side.
Right.
And bingo. Because the one and this is the one thing, the one person that Pooty Poot feared more than any other was her. Because he knew he wasn't ever going to get out from under any sanctions with her. Now we've got a president who won't impose sanctions when they're passed.
Right.
Cui bono, man. Cui bono.
And I think it had something else to do with the energy with some pipelines going from Syria to the Middle East, too. But, that had to do with the sanctions. You know, it's all about money. It's always about the money.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, I had just had a note from Steve from Georgistan. He said, mentioned to Todd that being as how the House said there was no collusion this morning, Washington Journal devoted the opening hour to letting the rubes celebrate.
Thank you, Steve. And that's exactly what, oh, my God. And they were like, yeah, you see, they said it. And a lot of these people don't even think understand that this is one of three investigations.
Good riddance to bad rubbish with the House investigation, because it was compromised from jump.
From jump.
Devin Nunes was running it from behind the scenes anyway. As Steve points out, if that committee had determined that there was collusion, Washington Journal's opening hour would have been all about how tree frogs in the Amazon are becoming emasculated.
You never know. It's interesting, I'm trying to figure out if the host picks the topics. Like, in other words, I don't know if they have interns that do their prep work. Because I know that people have been complaining about Kimberly Atkinson, who is she's a senior Washington reporter for the Boston Globe, all right? And she also does weekends mostly on C-SPAN. And people will call in, the Trumpers will call in and complain, well, I've seen you on NBC, MSNBC, and I know you're biased. And she's not. And matter of fact, she's an attorney, so she really is good at just being middle of the road. You know, because that's what you're supposed to be. You're a moderator. You're not supposed to respond to the callers, or at least that part. You know, open lines.
That part you're not supposed to say. Hi, caller. Let's go to the goddamn idiot line now.
Right. In other words, it's like, okay, next call. You know, and then once in a while, what they'll do is they'll bring up a story that will totally debunk whatever dumb shit they just said. But you know, once in a while, you get a really good caller. As a matter of fact, I heard Scott a couple of weeks ago. I think it might have had to do with the Electoral College, and he had the most. He was the most sane person I heard for the most of that hour. I think, you know, sometimes it's just a bunch of crazy people, or you know, who knows? But you never know. Listen, what I'm saying here is that people have to get. I know everybody's getting sour on the whole political process now, and it's easy to do. But we have to get out and vote, because it's easy for the other side to vote now. And we have a little bit of a wave here, and we have to cry. We have to get on top of this thing. And remember, just vote straight Democrat, okay? Democratic Party. And what I'm saying is that if the person doesn't work out, have runoff election. Just say, hey, you're not working out. And someone speak up against them, because the other way is definitely not going to work. It's definitely not going to work. We're in trouble. We are in big trouble.
By the way, you brought up Sessions. Got a note from Clarence of North Philly, soon to be of South Carolina. And Clarence said, Sessions' demise and overall exposure was delayed by the forced exit of Al Franken. I think the senator was getting very close to Sessions' part in the Trump family crime conspiracy. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that makes sense. Because Al Franken was paying more attention to that than anybody else. Whoops, the baby!
Yeah, and you see what happened, you know, and that's a shame. Look what we sacrificed. And now, look how insignificant that looks now. I'm saying, I mean, it wasn't great what he did.
Or and didn't you know what? Do. Who knows?
Or didn't do. And, you know, remember, he admitted he had a drinking problem. Remember, he was recovering. So I was kind of thinking maybe he was just—I don't know—but that's no excuse. But even still, hey, and I don't know if Clarence is still listening, but I remember the last time I was at Max's, man, at Broad and Erie, and I had a huge, that cheesesteak was so big. I don't think I had to eat for like 2 days after that.
Like a python with a capybara. Yeah, don't have to eat for 6 months. Just go coil up and hang out for a little bit.
It was pretty much like that. Well, all right, man.
All right, that's our first instance of food porn this evening. And that's pretty good food porn in my book.
There you go.
What's the name of the place
I'll talk
again?
To you later. Max's.
Max's, okay.
At Broad and Erie, yep.
Max's at Broad and Erie. You know what? I'll make a note of that for future reference. If I ever get to take, you know, it's not that far. I mean, if we can ever get things calmed down, settled down a little bit, you know, I just need to take, you know, maybe take a Friday off on a long holiday weekend, and take Agnes and run up and show her Bartram's Gardens and get a cheesesteak.
You know, Bob, I'm so backing you on that. I mean, I'm serious, like, spiritually. You really, because honestly, just like we were talking about how you can, it's palpable when you're on that platform at Gettysburg. When you're in what they call Old City, North Philadelphia, you're on these streets. And even like in Germantown, where I used to live, but you don't want to go to Germantown. But on these old streets near the Delaware River, you can look down at these Belgian, they call them Belgian cobblestones, you know. And, you know, people have been going to little taverns and living, and some of those houses are still there. You can feel it. I mean, you can even smell some of the salt in the river, because it's like the Delaware kind of mixes with fresh and salt water kind of around that point, you know. But you would really appreciate, anybody who likes history, I mean, how can you not appreciate it, you know?
Oh, no, and you say I wouldn't want to go to Germantown. Well, maybe not, but. That's where the already established Germans ran my ancestor out of. Nah, keep moving, son. No room for you here. There is no room for you here. You must keep going.
Oh my God. But there's a lot of history. You know what's interesting? Because Germantown is mostly, there's pockets of really wealthy people, and it's mostly poor. But there's pockets of really wealthy people who live in, you know, houses from the 18th century, you know, 17-something.
Yeah, well, you know, once upon a time, it was an entirely separate enclave outside of Philadelphia, and it's where the hardworking, industrious Germans settled.
I'm telling you, man, I was born and raised there. They got Germantown friends there, and then, you know, I went to the Quaker boarding school, but Germantown is just—it's just a really vibrant place. I mean, you know, it's got a lot of poor areas, but you could be at a bus stop.
Well, and you got to remember Agnes's ancestor, John Bartram, founder of Bartram's Gardens. You know, it's got to run. It's got to be something genetic. All these generations, and she's as much as a heretic as he was. He got how really how bad off do you have to be to get run out of the Quakers? And it's not because he was like, you know, some sort of let's go to war, I love war kind of, no. Actually, it had to do with his stance on slavery. Because not only was he opposed to slavery, he had this idea of equality.
Really?
Yeah, and the friends were opposed to slavery, but I mean, they didn't want to live with them or anything.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
But if I'm not mistaken, they ran him on that because so he just said, well, fuck this, I'll keep shipping plants to England and hanging out and drinking beer with Ben.
Maybe he was too radical for them because that's the thing. See, the Quakers had that low key thing. Like, there's a place called the Johnson House right at Germantown and Johnson Street in Germantown, and that was a stop on the Underground Railroad. It was like a little farm back then, and it's still there. I mean, this was like right in my old neighborhood. You know, the Cliveden estate was right there, because they used to hide. Maybe they were low key people. They don't wear fancy. They had a lot of money. They have money. They always keep money. I don't know. This is very. They don't dress fancy. They just they're real good with real estate. But that's anyway, he was radical. So you're saying that Agnes is radical like that? Is that what he's trying to say?
She's cantankerous, and she's not going to take anybody's. declaration of doctrine or anything. John Bartram died at the age of 78 in 1777, so he was a few years older than Ben Franklin. But no, mm-hmm. they were drinking buddies.
Oh man, so that's on your bucket. You guys got to do that. You got to do it.
And get a cheesesteak at Max's.
Yeah, got it. You'll love it. It's not far from Temple. Temple hours are everywhere. Ooh.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. And Nova, man. No, I don't know if Nova's playing tonight. You don't watch basketball. But yeah, Nova's in the finals.
I don't? I don't?
I didn't think you liked college basketball.
No, that's the basketball I do like. It's the NBA I don't much care about.
I misunderstood you. Okay.
No, my beloved Mountaineers are in the dance. They're a 5 seed, and if they knock off... if they knock off Murray State and Wichita State, presumably they'll go up against Nova.
Oh, man. That'll be something.
And then probably lose.
No, you never know. That's the whole thing. Who knows? We never know. Have you gotten any snow from this nor'easter?
Are you kidding me? I got up yesterday morning. There was a foot of snow on the ground. Didn't much melt away today.
Uh oh. Bad. Okay.
And it was colder today than it was yesterday.
So it's not going anywhere. Yeah. The temperature, the wisteria had already started coming out, and now it's getting cold again. We've got a whole new batch of air in here now. Look, I'm on the front porch. I had this old thermometer on the front porch. It's from the 40s. And I've just been here before I was born, and somehow it has lasted. It's amazing. I'm always finding old stuff around here. Like, I've got this old porcelain back in the 30s and 20s and 30s. There was a lot of porcelain dipped pans and pots and stuff like that, Finding those around here. And Pyrex dishes.
Hey, just to give you an idea of how cool John Bartram was. He was the first person to introduce the Venus flytrap to cultivation. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's one of my favorite.
He introduced the rhododendron and magnolia to Europe.
Was he friends with Audubon? John?
No. He's way before then. Remember, he dies in 1778. Ben Franklin, because they were drinking buddies. Ben Franklin lobbied George III in 1765 to award John Bartram a 50 pound per year pension as King's botanist for North America.
Wow.
And
okay.
And 50 pounds a year wasn't slack money.
No. All right. So that's way back. They used to drink it to like the Tun Tavern. That's where you want to go. Tun Tavern. I mean, not for a cheesesteak. Oh, man, you're going to freak out when you go to Old City, Philadelphia.
It's Agnes who's going to bug. I mean, this is all just cool to me, but that's blood to her.
She
Hell, he was even elected a foreign member of the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences in Stockholm in 1769. That'll tickle our buddy Scott.
Okay, so this is why she's a Viking princess then. Okay.
Yeah, because the name Bartram itself, I think it translates from the Old Norse as bright raven, or something like it.
Wow!
Because they were Vikings who settled in, you know, Normandy, Norsemen.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean that's So hence the but she's not just the Viking warrior princess anymore. She's the Viking warrior pharaoh princess. She's also a reincarnated pharaoh, I've decided.
Those gardens down there, it's like estuary, so it's kind of flat. It's flat, and it's like wetland, and it's really nice. And you've got the skyline of the city. But, I mean, you're like out in the country, but you can see the city right there.
And like I've said, they moved, but once upon a time they were, you know, right downtown. I can't remember the name of the street, but... I used to buy all my cigars from a store in Philadelphia. And
with the Black Cat?
The Black Cat.
I've been in the Black Cat. Yeah. Oh yeah.
They still carry a brand that it's hard to find in other places. I think it's pretty expensive, but there's a brand of cigar called a Butera Royal Vintage. And it's a Dominican cigar, and it's just a beautiful smoke. And they had the best prices on them, so I used to get my Buteras from Black Cat Cigar. Sansom Street is where they were.
Yeah. Now, Sansom Street, and I know last time we talked, I don't know, you had me all going off on downtown and bookbinders and stuff, and Bookbinds is down there, 15th and Sansom. And the reason I brought up that bar, McGlinchey's, is because that's where I'd always go. There's a lot of nice restaurants right there. But you see, what happened a few years ago is that, well, some years ago is that, excuse me, Poppy, I'm on the phone, is that the kids got, you know, the parents got older, and the kids split up the business. So it was like the old original bookbinders and then bookbinders.
Yeah, because they had the signature turtle soup.
Exactly. Right. What I was about to say. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
By the way, Clarence just wrote in and said, "I lived one block away from Max's."
No way. So he's at the Broad and Erie subway. Yeah, and I used to take that to work. Well, everything at Temple. Yeah. Just. Mm. So he knows what I'm talking about. See, North Philly, man, between like Broad and Erie and Temple. Hey, Clarence, you live in the Badlands, though, man. Oh, my God. You know, Clarence, call in and talk about what the Badlands is like, just so it's not just coming from me. I'm serious. I was in the Badlands. The Badlands. You know what I'm talking about, Clarence. Yeah, so McGlinchey's is like, it's the dive. They got another good dive bar, but it's newer. But this one's, like I was telling you, old. And, I don't even know how you can still smoke in there. And you have to wear like shitty clothes. I mean, if you don't want to smell like, you know, an ashtray when you come out, because it's cloudy in there. This is the only place that.
Nice.
And I mean, they have Glenfiddich cheap. I mean, you can get a shot of good scotch, a nice beer. I mean, cheap. You know, it's the kind of place you don't want to hang out all day. You know, you go in there and maybe get three drinks and roll out. You know what I'm saying? And because the Kimmel Center is like two blocks away, like right around the corner. So you can like dip in there and get your drink on, burn one between there and the symphony, and then go sit down and enjoy some music.
Clarence says, "Tell Todd I'm moving from 15th and Erie. Kevin Hart grew up down the street from me."
Oh, my God. I know exactly where that is. Man, he's
isn't this community probably, just freaking awesome?
Oh my God, he's right on the west side of the subway station.
Old home week.
Wow, this is in Trump. So all right, so we're gonna be in touch. Okay.
And well, man, he's gonna be down your way soon enough. So there may be a mini horn-in taking place without me. Because,
well,
you know,
we'll send you,
you know, it's like it says in the Bible, wherever two or more people come together in my name, there am I also.
Well, you know what? You're everywhere. Well, you're not the knowledge that is on this program. Because if you go back and listen to some of the things that happened on this program, it's prescient, you know?
Well, that's why I've got the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that says, "Answer Hazy, ask me again later."
Well, hey, man, I'm frying some fish, and it's not Friday, and I'm not Catholic, but it doesn't matter.
Nah, good fresh fish?
No, with some crappy frozen fish, but, you know, I just felt like having some fish. But, you know, sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
No.
I could have dressed it up, but I didn't.
No, it'll still be good. It'll still be good. All right, Todd, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Talk to you later.
Later, man. Bye. Our buddy, Barbecue Todd from South Carolina, Stan. Lines open if you want to jump in. Again, 304-574-8178. Toll free if you need us to pay the freight. 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. It appears to be working nicely. A little catch up. You know, I said we may not have, and you know, don't get your hopes up on this. But the Hill reports that John McCain has come out and actively condemned Gina Haspel's nomination to run the CIA. In his statement, he said, "The torture of detainees in U.S. custody during the last decade was one of the darkest chapters in American history. Ms. Haspel needs to explain the nature and extent of her involvement in the CIA's interrogation program during the confirmation process." That's not quite the condemnation I'd look for. The condemnation I'd look for is this woman has no business being nominated to any position of power, and I will vote against her no matter what. But still, that he's, and of course, this this may well turn out to be a giant nothing burger from McCain. God knows it wouldn't be the first time that's happened. Whoosh. And the Diogenes-esque search for an honest Republican it continues apace. At the same time that you have to keep Joe Manchin from voting for her, because that's what my constituents want. Jesus. And by the way, just by way of follow up, get the hockey puck and the duct tape, because this is pretty sickening. It's a short little clip. But this is what the mouse forced Joy Behar to do relative to hurting the tender fifis of Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geeks.
Tonight, the vice president was on Sean Hannity talking about the recent conversation he had with Joy Behar. Take a look.
You and I know the criticism comes with public life, but I felt it was important that I defend the faith of tens of millions of Americans.
Oh, yeah, he's the defender of the faith. By God, he's anointed himself to... Wow, you used to have to be king of somewhere to get to be defender of the faith. So he was defending the faith of tens of millions of Americans who apparently all have auditory hallucinations just like him.
Against that kind of slander. And I did so. And
Slander. So now, according to Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek, it's slander if you say that someone who claims to hear voices is mentally ill. Slander. If you write it, it's libel. Well, bite me, Mike. I'll stand my ground even if they made Joy Behar retreat from hers. If you claim to hear a voice, I do not care if it is the voice of your sainted mother, long past dead and gone to her long home. I do not care if it is the voice of Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. I don't care if it's the voice of Alexander Graham Bell. I don't care if it's the voice of Ayn Rand. If you claim to hear voices, you have a mental illness. And the thing is, you're not crazy Roman Catholics. You're Episcopals. You're halfway decent Christians out there. You know, United Churches of Christ, Congregationalists, Unitarians, they don't have to be Christians, but I think they'll generally agree with me. Maybe not with the ferocity with which I say it, but if you hear voices, you have mental illness. Because Mike Pencilneck Geek here is in a bit of a corner, and the paint's still wet. Because he's in a position of having to say that, for instance, Joan of Arc was completely mentally healthy. And that she really heard the things she claims to have heard. You know, if you have a nuanced discussion with sane Christians, they'll say something like, well, of course it's possible, because see, they're theists, they believe in a God. And they'll say things like, well, of course it's entirely possible to be inspired by God. Consider the magnificent works of Michelangelo Buonarroti or Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach wrote all that church music. Obviously, he was inspired by God. But if you press him on it and you say, yeah, but does that mean that he heard a voice, that Jesus whistled the toccata and fugue in whatever it was in his ear, and then he just transcribed it? Is that, oh, no. Inspiration is a deeply spiritual thing. And you go, okay. And other things can inspire you to, oh, absolutely. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Look, Shakespeare was inspired by the beauty of whoever that was he was writing to, and a summer's day. That doesn't mean he heard a voice. Some may say that I'm putting too much emphasis on this story. I don't think I am. I think this is important. Because, for instance, if you go into the voting booth, like people are doing in Western Pennsylvania today, and there are voices in your head, you're not voting sanely. And then, moreover, there's the issue of Mike Pence anointing himself to speak for tens of millions of Christians, which he does not. The reference was specifically to him, not tens of millions of Christians, but to him and his claim that he hears voices. Oh, and by the way, the next time you hear one of these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians talking about how the brutal, intolerant Muslims have these laws where you can't, criticize the Islam. Remind them of this moment when the Vice President of the United States used the power and prestige of his office to suppress the free speech, and this is a First Amendment issue, because he is acting as a member of government, used his power to suppress the free speech of an American citizen. And did so with no compunctions whatsoever. If you want to see the face of creeping theocracy, not to mention creepy theocracy, Mike Pence is it.
You know, I give Joy Behar a lot of credit. She picked up the phone. She called me. She was very sincere. And she apologized. And one of the things my faith teaches me is grace. Forgive as you've been forgiven.
So does mine, but I'm not as good at it as you.
Well, look, but I...
Yeah, because, you know, the Hannity job, man of God. Hannity, Christian. You tell it to the Marines.
But I said, I said to Joy, of course I forgive you. That's part of my faith experience. But I did encourage her, and I'm still encouraging her, to use the forum of that program or some other public forum to apologize to tens of millions of Americans who were equally offended.
So I think Vice President Pence is right. I was raised to respect everyone's religious faith, and I fell short of that. I sincerely apologize for what I said. Okay.
Jesus. Can somebody please stick to their fucking guns? She didn't fall short of anything. She was not intolerant of anybody's religious faith. Tolerance is not obsequy. Being intolerant of Mike Pence's faith is to say, that little evangelical pissant should have his guts stomped out for being a Christian. I did not just say that, Agent Fred. That is intolerance. Obsequy is, I don't dare say anything about his bizarre, loopy, mental illness for fear of him using the power of his office to suppress and oppress me. That's obsequy. And that is what happened. Okay? Seems pretty clear to me. By the way, we are 44 minutes away from the end of the program and 44 minutes away from a complete goose egg were it not for our buddy Glenn, who apparently wants me to do some ciphering. That took us down to $194.57, $194.57, and then... courtesy of Ms. Karen, of Steve, Ms. Karen, and Little Cletus and Little Twiggy, a challenge. $20 on the table. If it can just be doubled. If it can just be met. And so if anybody would like to kick $20 toward answering Ms. Karen's challenge, that would take us down to $154.57. You have no idea how many brain cells die every time I have to cipher on the fly. Let's go over. Oh, by the way, okay. Note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. Notice Joy Behar didn't say I apologize if you were offended. No, she offered an humble and sincere apology. I will note, however, that the impression I took away from it was that she offered it after having taken a big bite of a green persimmon, because she kind of looked like she was going to puke. No, I apologize if anyone was offended, is the kind of non-apology that good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians offer up when they get caught being the little theocrats that they are. All right, back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother, if you don't slow down, you're going to blow a gasket.
I'm fine. No, I'm fine. No, Jim, I'm okay. Mm-hmm.
Every bulb and whatever you've got in the studio is going to start to go boom, 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 and your robe's going to flap up, and Mumpy's going to get upset.
I ain't got no robes, and I'm not doing naked radio. By God, Jim, I'm layered this evening.
That's what you say. That's what you say. Well, listen, I want you to get out a piece of paper and a pencil and write down the term Episcopalian. Episcopalian. We are not Episcopals. Thank you.
Well, okay. I mean...
Thank you.
All right. We've been down this road before, but, I mean, if it matters, I mean, okay.
Well, it's just a matter of being correct. I know how scrupulous you are about being correct and being on point, on task, on time, and all that other good stuff. I just thought I would, mention that to you as a positive thing. Just, and that's it, a constructive element, that's all.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
And by the way, I did watch the two first episodes of Berlin Babylon, or Babylon Berlin, whichever it is. I can't get too straight.
But Babylon God, Berlin, yeah.
That is a great, great, great story.
So you've got your two episodes in?
Uh-huh, sure did. And where they shot the interiors of that particular sequence, well, at least the interior dwellings of people. Oh, dear God. That was just like Berlin back in the 60s and early 70s. I'm not sure how they did some of the outtakes, but they were real good.
Well, I think if you stick with it, I mean, it's a pretty compelling story from the get go, but if you stick with it, it's only gonna draw you more further in.
My God, everybody's on morphine.
But that's accurate because it wasn't just a German thing.
Yeah.
In the early part of the 20th century, for instance, people were treated for their cocaine habits.
Mm-hmm.
They were weaned by putting them on heroin or morphine. And
yeah,
that's a fact.
The Bayer Aspirin Company developed that as a cure for alcoholism. But I'm not sure if what's in those ampules, I'm not sure, well, was that heroin or was it just morphine?
I honestly never got a good answer to it, but I will simply say that it will not always be what it appears to be.
Well, apparently it was designed to calm some of these horrible panic attacks that these World War One veterans had. And I know during the first opening scene, it's when that policeman had that guy in his office, and I'm sure what he was there for was either being a Trotskyite or whatever. And when he took that pistol and blew his officer's head off, I said, oh, my Lord, you definitely got my attention with that particular sequence.
Well, you're the first person, at least in this community, to say that they've watched it. And it's one of those situations where, you know, the subtitles don't bother you. And there are enough German cognates that every now and then, About half of the yas sound like yeah anyway.
Exactly. And, you know, and even the dance hall scenes are really pretty interesting. And, of course, the mad drag leaders of some of those parties and stuff like that, that's all pretty accurate. And there was
did you love the Marlena Dietrich-esque song?
Yeah, I did.
Zu Asches zu Staub.
Yeah, I did. Marlena had good fit. She got the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Joseph von Sternberg said, "You know, come on, let's go." And so away they to Hollywood. She went, and of course, you know. Well, that time Goebbels had become real popular with his thing. He tried to get her to come back, and she told him no, no, not no, but hell no. She wouldn't do it. And she was really a very interesting person. She really was. And she grew up in that era. She was the daughter of a Prussian policeman. Her father was a Prussian and so I'm not sure how she hooked on to Sternberg, but he got her into Hollywood. And boy, was she something else there. And all of the clothes and the androgyny of her costumes and stuff. I tell you, she looked better than most men in white tie and tails.
And one of the... As we would later find out, especially in his posthumous writings, you know, Hemingway had a thing for boyish girls.
Yeah.
And he fell hard for Marlena Dietrich.
Well, I'm afraid he fell the wrong way with her. Now, if I'm not mistaken, she was married to the guy who wrote... Now, somebody up there can correct me. For some reason, I began to think it's these voices in my head. You triggered them, Bob. You started them. It's telling me that she was married to the guy who wrote All Quiet on the Western Front. For a brief time. Now, I'm not sure. Don't hold me to it. And don't throw rocks at me.
No, I'll check here.
What, Maria... Oh, God, I can't remember the guy's name. Now, you've got those box of Connor and Pugh and D-Miners going off of my head. Not in my head, but in my head.
She was married only once to assistant director Rudolf Zeba.
Okay. Well, she had some relationship with that guy who wrote All Quiet on the Western Front. I know that. There were some... They were friends.
Affairs with Gary Cooper, Mexican actress Lupe Velez.
She was a spitfire.
John Gilbert. Lupe Velez once said of Marlena Dietrich, "If I had the opportunity to do so, I would tear out Marlena Dietrich's eyes."
Well, Lupe Velez was quite a spitfire.
Had an affair with John Wayne. Strong friendship with Orson Welles, but that was platonic. An affair with Mercedes de Acosta.
Yeah, well, hell, Mercedes de Acosta had an affair with everybody. She had an affair with Garbo and all these other people, too. She was just kind of a Hollywood hang-around. They wrote books about people.
Well, I'm not seeing anything here about... who was it? Now I have to look up All Quiet on the Western Front. Try to remember.
Rowell 41 and live.
Let's see. Here we go. Yeah, Eric Maria Remarque.
Okay. They were contemporaries and they were friends. I knew there was Maria there somewhere. But I'll tell you one thing. That girl could... In her own way, could sing, and she was a damn good actress. Too.
Well, I mean, that's what I was saying. The theme song for Babylon Berlin is clearly done on homage to Marlena Dietrich.
Well, obviously. And I encourage anybody with Netflix to pull that up at all 16 episodes. I mean, I handled the first two, and I couldn't handle any more today because things got pretty grim in there.
Well, but it'll keep right on going. And the thing is, for some reason or another, the conventions of everything is going to be okay don't suck you in with this. It's you don't know if everything's going to be okay. And generally, since it's 1929. You pretty much know that in the long view, things are definitely not going to be okay.
No. Berlin was not typical of Germany. And, of course, Berlin was the last city to really be won over by the Nazis, and that was due to Goebbels. And even at the heights of the elections when they were voting Hitler into power, he only got one out of every four in Berlin. He had it in for Berlin big time. He hated that town.
And you know, while I was in New York, I saw some list that said that the two best nightlife cities on the planet to this day are one, New York, and two, Berlin.
Yep.
Which makes me think I'd kind of like to see Berlin.
I think you would. When I saw it, it wasn't quite like that. Bob, when I saw it, you could actually look over from one side to the other and see in the eastern sector, they had built Hollywood fronts to resemble buildings.
Give the
impression of being reconstructed.
Yeah, a Potemkin Berlin.
Yeah, and they did. And those Stasi, oh, God, you did not want to get mixed up with one of them. Uh-uh. And I have another story I can tell you about that, but it's just too long, and I don't want to weary you with it. But, I saw that city when it was in pretty bad shape. And, of course, West Berlin was just wonderful. It was just really coming into its own.
Well, one of the things, you know what a history nerd I am. I'd love to see it and see the Pergamon Museum. And all the other museums on that island. But, you know, the Ishtar Gate, yeah, thanks. I'd love to.
Well, you know, that's what Speer used to build Hitler's big Zeppelin thing, was that Pergamum altar.
Really? I didn't know.
Yeah, that's what he designed the whole thing after. That was the idea that gave him the idea that became his plans for Zeppelin Field, which is still there.
I'll be darned.
If you want to go to a place, go to Zeppelin Field. You get in there.
So much. It's a pity travel is so damned expensive. I gotta take Agnes to Philadelphia for a cheesesteak and a trip to Bartram's Gardens, and then I have to go and party the night away by not drinking in Berlin. Yeah, that dadgum my innards. But it's frustrating that way.
Well. You know, what can I say? You know, it's unfortunate, but when you see these things and these buildings that were there, you don't see the interior of them the way they are.
You know, they were even faithful. That's why I said the properties master was so good. Whoever did the scripting and whoever did the props was wonderful. They were even faithful to a particularly obscure model of handgun.
Yep.
If you keep going, will play prominently in the plot.
And of course, you have the glass columns, the square glass columns that were lit from the interior. The only thing I haven't seen yet are the little cabarets in which each table had a telephone.
I'm not sure if that's in there, but.
Yeah.
Maybe they just couldn't work it into the plot. Well, Jim, you have yourself a very good evening, my friend.
Well, okay. Sorry about that. As far as Joy Behar is concerned, I want to ask you one other thing.
Sure.
I understand. Did she not leave the View?
No, she's still there.
I've been somewhere where she had left it.
No. I think you're thinking of someone else. But no, Joy's still there.
Well, that's good. I think she did the right thing. I mean, the last thing you want to do is to create something that's going to give a lot of these people a rallying point and drive them even further into the ground.
Well, you may be right, but by the same token, I think we're in a place in this country where if we don't someday begin pushing back against these religious maniacs, we're going to find ourselves, to the extent that we haven't already, in a full on no kidding theocracy. We've got a president who talks about wanting to be president for life, and we've got a vice president who's declared himself defender of the faith. That way lies madness, Jim.
Well, I think you might be right about the theocratic leanings, and we'll have to wait and see. But it may already have arrived.
Well, that's the scary part. Jim, have yourself a good night. Take care, my friend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, good. Somebody at least is watching Babylon Berlin. Let's keep things going. And by the way, challenge met. Thank you, Jack. Jack answered Ms. Karen's challenge. That takes us down to $154.57, I think it was, to keep from having a deficit to deal with tomorrow. Meanwhile, there's Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I hadn't planned on calling in today.
Oh, you just say that.
No, I'm serious. Because I know I'm one of the regulars, but sometimes even regularity can be a thing, you know? But ask Punky, he'll tell you. That poor little bastard has to live with me. Come on. But anyway, I've got a couple of quickies, and then maybe I'll go or whatever. I when you were quoting the sonnet by Shakespeare, it dawned on me that if Shakespeare were alive today, he would find Donald Trump a source of true inspiration. And here's what he might pen.
Oh my.
As a result.
Oh wait, did you hear Shakespeare's voice in your head?
No.
Okay, just checking.
The voice is in my head. If you're a voice out there and you want to get in my head, you can't just walk on in. There's a process, you know. But we'll save that for.
There are applications and background checks. Yes.
Oh, forms in triplicate. God knows.
Yeah, and reverb is not enough.
Exactly. But here's how Trump would be a true inspiration if Shakespeare were around today. And it's lovely when you think of it. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? That's how the original sonnet goes. Today's version by Shakespeare in regard to Trump would be, shall I compare thee to a summer's eve? To it, a douche. Anyway, that's where my mind...
You may not believe me, but I knew you were going there.
Well, I knew you knew. That's why I called. See, the voices in my head also let me know what others are up to. So it all works out.
Oh, that's creepy. I hope you turn me off about 11 o'clock Eastern time. Would you please?
Okay, on to the next topic. As always, I enjoyed hearing from Todd on the program. And I wondered, since he mentioned me and the Electoral College, if you were ever able to send him that little snippet of John Chancellor from years ago.
Good.
Because I every day I open the mailbox and I hope to hear from Todd, because I included my email address. I am sure he and I could have lovely conversations.
Well, to be quite blunt, I don't hear from Todd a whole lot.
Well, there you go. Maybe the voices in his head are preventing him.
he's got a constant cacophony in his own head, telling him it's time to put something on the grill. It's time to put something on the grill. Is the pecan wood seasoned? How about the peach saplings? Do we have any grapevines? It gets pretty loud.
Well, he's like Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, you know. 10 minutes to Judge Wapner, you know, except he's talking about grilling. But anyway,
in the mornings when it's 10 minutes to Washington Journal, definitely 10 minutes to Washington Journal.
Yeah, I personally don't know how he stands it. Every now and again, well, I don't have that level of service on my cable now for about a week. but I can get it online. And I can only take Washington Journal in drips and drabs because those people, they're out there. And then you go into your mind's eye.
Well, they are, after all, Trumpansies, and you have to treat it like a trip to the zoo. Just, you know, put on the plastic goggles and look out for the flying poo. That rhymed. What? Wow. It's Shakespeare night. That rhymed and scanned.
Tis. And buy the little paper bag of feed so you can feed the animal, the Trumpansies. But watch out when they... Well, no, I won't go there. The other thing, you were talking about music, classical type music. My favorite is the music of Professor Peter Schickele and P.D.Q. Bach. If you're not familiar with P.D.Q. Bach, go to YouTube and look up some of the great parody classical pieces from the 60s that he and his crew did. Amazingly funny stuff. And it would probably be right up your alley, because I know you like...
Oh, no, I'm familiar with P.D.Q. Bach.
And my freshman and sophomore year music teacher either went to school with him or knew him or had worked with him or something. I forget exactly what the connection was. And there was another music teacher who had gotten into teaching a couple of years after he left the New York City-based Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. He was he wasn't a musician, but he was in charge of the orchestrations for the Tonight Show band. I'll have to dig out my yearbook because I cannot call his name. I cannot even remember it. I don't even know my own name at this point.
Well, Punky was all quiet and reticent and maybe thoughtful or doing his yoga and meditation last night, but he's up and running this evening.
Yeah, well, he gets like that, probably because it's going to rain again. He doesn't like the rain. He likes dry weather and warm.
Well, I take it based upon the fact that we're having this conversation that you decided not to go down and, as the Stones sang, get your fair share of abuse today.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I stayed up late, which for me was like till about 11 this morning, from being up since yesterday afternoon. And I stayed up long enough to watch Air Force One land. And it dawned on me, no, I'm just not up for this. So I went and had my nap. And then I got up this afternoon and tuned in the show. So I recorded all the evening newscasts, so I'll catch all the gory details. Now, did he pick a version of The Wall today, or was he just previewing them?
He was just examining them. By the way, there's another. For some reason or another, today was a Trump bizarreness kind of cavalcade.
Well, Tuesday is Trump Bizarro Day. I thought everybody knew that. It's an international
thing.
I
didn't get the memo. But so after the firing of Tillerson, these stories start coming out about, one, the spokesman for the State Department got sacked because he wouldn't go along with the White House line about how Tillerson got canned. But then, you know, the weirdest of the weird, Scott.
And that's saying something in today's context.
Yeah, I mean, this is, this one gets the honorary bottle of rot gut tequila. Tillerson went with Trump on the China trip last year. Do you remember that? Punky does.
Vaguely.
So it was a big state dinner. And this ties into what Clarity said earlier about him being cranky because he's on a fish and salad diet. I read the story. It's like, you know, how is this out of how is this out of character or something for Yeah, Tillerson was, for Christ's sakes, the CEO of Exxon, okay? You move in circles where they bring the dishes that have its own special proprietary, you know, tools for eating it, right?
Yeah.
Tiny shrimps for fork and little shrimps for, or little forks for oysters and the wee tiny spoons for the caviar and all that bullshit.
And the finger bowls. Don't forget the finger bowls.
Those are finger. I thought those were shot glasses. Never mind. You mean that's not vodka?
And the cue sticks are not pot passers.
Well, call me Cornpone. But part of this state dinner, and it's really kind of hard for me to describe, Scott, because it's so goddamn nuts. As one of the courses in this state dinner at the Great Hall of the People in Beijing, they bring out a Caesar salad. Now, under ordinary circumstances, we could riff on it and talk about how geezer disgust us ate a Caesar salad and all of that. But Trump started obsessing over the Caesar salad. Have you ever seen a toddler or a little kid at a table with other little kids, and there's the one little kid who wants to lord it over the other ones? And, hey, you got to eat the broccoli. You got to eat the broccoli. You can't not eat the broccoli. I don't like broccoli either, but we all have to eat the broccoli, okay?
Yeah, I may have been that kid.
Okay, then we're clear. So Trump starts obsessing over the Caesar salad. And I don't know if they were making it tableside. That's always cool. That's one of those old school restaurant things. There's a wooden bowl that's probably got God knows how many different pathogens growing in it. They crack an egg and there's some lemon juice and they sit there and they make the emulsion with the, you know, with the chopped up anchovies and all of that stuff.
I'm salivating, Bob. I love Caesar salad.
I don't know if they were doing it tableside or they're just setting it down.
Well, what possible issue could someone have over a Caesar salad? I mean...
Well, okay, so that's you, me, and I'm presuming the rest of the Horn Family Community Congregation going, okay, well, I can do it. You know, I mean, there are people out there that go, ooh, anchovies. But, you know, anchovies in Caesar salad dressing are not disgusting, even to people who hate anchovies. And I don't hate anchovies. They're just oily, salty, little greasy fish.
It's just one of the flavors on the artistic culinary palate.
So they're serving Caesar salad, and Geezer Disgustus, or the Spirochetes, start obsessing about it, and he starts leaning over, looking at Tillerson, and saying, "Rex, eat the salad. Rex, eat the salad. You got to eat the salad, Rex. Rex, eat the salad. Our Chinese hosts may be offended if you don't eat the salad, Rex. They're watching, Rex. You got to eat the salad." And Tillerson reportedly laughed off the president's comment. As the Hill reports, the Journal cited the incident as an example of the sometimes tense relationship between Trump and Tillerson.
I remember that now that you mentioned the eat the salad part.
What? I mean, I'm sorry, and I hate to keep coming back to this part of history, but damnation, okay? Why do I keep being reminded of, you know, after he and Ava had chomped down on the cyanide, everybody in the bunker lighting a cigarette? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, now that I think about it, if they did prepare the Caesar salad tableside, maybe what Trump's issue was not about the salad, but you know how the waiter, after the salad is prepared, he'll pick up the pepper grinder and offer to grind some fresh peppercorns onto the top of your salad.
At which point I look at him and say, "Break your wrist, man. Go crazy."
Yeah. Well, most of us do. But maybe on some level, you know, when you wander into the Trump insecurity maze and Hall of Mirrors, all bets are off. Anything can happen. But perhaps he took it as a personal insult. You know how we used to call him Tiny Hands?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Maybe he had a peppercorn grinder envy or something. Who the hell knows?
No. I got it.
Okay.
He's sitting there munching on the salad, and he hates it. He wants a fucking hamburger and two scoops of ice cream and humongous cake, damn it, because he's a 71-year-old toddler. But he's paranoid as all fuck, too, because of the spirochetes.
Yeah.
And so he's taking bites of the salad, and he leans over and says, "You've got to eat the salad too, Rex. You've definitely got to eat the salad. If I got to eat the salad, you got to eat the salad. It might offend our host if we..." He's actually sitting there thinking, they're going to poison me, and they're not going to poison Rex. Well, by God, if we're going to get poisoned by the Chinese, Rex, you little bastard, you're going with me. Because, you know, Rex is the former CEO, again, of Exxon, and he's got long-standing relationships in Beijing and Moscow and God knows anywhere else that they can sink a fucking well.
Well, he got a medal in Russia.
His Medal of Freedom with Mother Russia. Don't forget about it. But that's what it is. He's afraid that they're going to poison him, and he wants to see Rex take a bite of the salad so that he can know that the salad isn't poison.
It's like a Three Stooges routine where one of the drinks is poison.
No, it's the prince. Okay, if you tell me you've never seen The Princess Bride, I am reaching through this microphone. You understand? You've seen The Princess Bride.
I have seen it. It's been
years. This is the Iocane powder switch.
All right.
This is the bit where inconceivable with Wallace Shawn and switching the Iocane powders.
Yeah.
And you fool. there are only two rules: never get in a land war in Asia, and never gamble with a Sicilian when the stakes are death, and then boom, dies.
I'll have to rewatch.
And we find out that Inigo has built up it's Wesley has built up a slow tolerance to Iocane powder by virtue of being the Dread Pirate Roberts. No, Donald Trump is actually afraid that he's being poisoned by the Chinese, and Rex isn't going to get poisoned too. Holy shit.
And there's probably some sort of crouton phobia all mixed into the dynamic.
I can't stand the crunching of the croutons. I can barely tolerate the crunching of the lettuce. The croutons, it's like screaming to me.
He's got crouton voices in his otherwise empty head. I'm telling you, when you wander into that Hall of Mirrors and that madhouse, there's never a dull moment. It's like the worst bad acid experience you've ever had multiplied by who knows how many. Not that I would know about such things, but
I mean, where in the hell are we now? We've got a president who obsesses over salad. We're one print away from I fooled them with the Caesar. I fooled him with the Caesar salad, definitely. Yeah, believe me, I fooled him with the Caesar salad. Really, President Queeg?
Yeah, but there's no one on the planet, or at least in this country, should be in the least surprised that we're at where we're at. Because just last night, I watched the final episode in the Netflix series Dirty Money, which has to do with Trump, the con man, okay? And it gives a very nice recap of his non-veracity over the years. That's putting it charitably, okay? So, I mean, no one should be surprised that this fellow is, I would say, a half loaf worth of sandwiches short of a full picnic. As someone said once in a movie, his cheese has done slid off his cracker.
Good cracker.
And it doesn't get any, it won't get any better. It will only become a progressively more disturbing situation. Yet you've got 32% of the population, you know, who adore him. You know, it's like the next step, they're going to be doing fucking novenas.
But there's, yeah. there's a question that has to be answered. How morally compromised, how ethically and morally bankrupt is everybody who is around him that there is not one, I mean, again, back to Diogenes, it's Diogenes night on the horn, that there is not one honest human being around him who will stand up and say, this guy is unfit to be president.
Well, they're probably there, maybe there are a few, three or four, but each is waiting for the other person to speak first. It's like the salad. They're waiting. In terms of speaking out, they're waiting for Rex to take a bite of the Caesar salad. And I think I told you, as far as Diogenes, he's changed his mission.
Yes.
Talk about mission creep. He, in the age of Trump, Diogenes is searching for a single complete sentence that is not diagramming resistant. to come forth from the maw of Trump,
yeah,
and he's got a
salad.
Long fucking wait. He may as well go back to looking for the last honest guy.
Well, I think so. I mean, just looking for a sentence that actually has a subject verb and a predicate and doesn't involve believe me or fabulous or what? Oh, Jesus!
And did you? I know the time is short. Did you see? I don't know what the news coverage was like on whatever channel you were watching, but on the local 11 a.m. midday news, they were showing file footage of the various prototypes of the wall. Some of them are frightening in terms of the built-in, you know, in product creation.
You mean the one with the sharks with freaking laser beams?
No, I didn't see that. I saw things with, like, jagged metal spikes on the top, and there was one with a curved top surface. Oh, it's like out of the mind of the damned and the mad came these designs for these wall prototypes. And as memory serves, the companies who created these prototypes are not even saying who they are. Am I correct on that? But for fear of backlash.
No, I mean, you can dig down in because some of them, some of the companies are, of course, since they're associated with Trump, sketchy as fuck.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the caterer lady in Atlanta who got umpty bajillion dollars to provide food in Puerto Rico and had no way to do it, but did figure out how to cash the check.
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah.
You've been in a kitchen before? Well, you're qualified. Here's the check.
Yeah. Right. You know, can you spell kitchen?
Yeah. But I'm...
Okay, so it's that time now. How's Squidbillies coming?
I will be getting there soon. I'm telling you, the weekend looks like it's the most promising. You know, because since I've lowered my cable connection for TV, the options are few. But I'm finding a wealth of good stuff on not only Netflix, but also YouTube. There was a show that popped up yesterday on YouTube about the worldwide satellite television inaugural broadcast provided by the Telstar satellite in 1962, which was fascinating. Maybe it was just me, but it was just out of this world, literally fascinating. And you wonder why we can't get stuff like, you know, modern equivalents of progress steps done like that today. When there was a non-diagrammable sentence. Jesus, I'm channeling Trump. Help, help. I say again, help.
Once you've gone there, there's no help, Scott.
All right. Well, maybe Squidbillies would be the way to go tonight.
I think with the madness we're dealing with, I think Squidbillies will be perfect. And you know what? Look, if you watch Squidbillies, you're going to get more in touch with the Trump voting mindset than you thought you had would ever be able. It's Squidbillies is like an Attenborough.nature documentary for Trump voters.
Oh God. Should I fortify myself with strong drink?
I highly recommend that. Yes.
All right. Well, maybe that's the way to go.
Quadruple martini, two olives with a pickled onion in the middle.
Ooh.
You know, that's the and way. That's the mark. That's how you can spot a bartender. You look at him and you say, "I want a Gibson." A Gibson is more or less just a martini that has an onion instead of an olive.
I've had one with lemon peel, which I didn't like. I'm normally olives are my standby, but I've never tried a. Well, first of all, you've got to ask the guy, do you have pickled onions? Yes. Well, give him some coffee. That'll sober him up, you know? But I must try that. I must try that the next time I'm in the condiment aisle.
And of course, you know, I'm a gin person, not a vodka person. I'm so not a vodka person that when it comes to a Bloody Mary, I want mine made with tequila.
And, well, that's something else. That's not even really a Bloody Mary, technically.
Well, it's a Bloody Maria, but it tastes so much better. Just never was a vodka guy.
I tried tequila many, many moons ago, and it didn't agree with me.
Well, no, as the song says, it makes your clothes fall off.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'll give it another chance.
No photos. Just
okay.
No photos.
No, I promise. Okay. I promise.
We're all friends here, but we ain't that close, Scott.
I know you like me, but there's no need for me to show you my circus peanut in its little domestic
room. No, there was not even any need for you to mention your circus peanut either while we're at it, but, you know.
Well, I can see by the old clock on the wall that I better go.
Yeah, but probably should have happened. But you know, let me go find that Chronosynclastic Infundibulum and see if I can't knock this program off about 3 minutes ago. Pre-circus peanut.
Verily unto you, Bob, I say later.
Later, much. See you, Scott. And thus we're out of here. We close the program with 154.37 to go in fundraising. Hey, maybe some of that'll get knocked down over the course of the evening, between now and 6 o'clock tomorrow. Otherwise, the deacons are just going to keep moving through those plates get heavy after a while. Anyway, thanks to everybody. Thanks to all of you for joining in, whether you listen live or whether you listen via the podcast. Thank you ever so kindly. Thanks for all your notes and the fun we have together. One last answer. Robert in Australia wants to know, do I have to know anything cultural to appreciate Squidbillies? No, there is absolutely nothing cultural about the Squidbillies whatsoever. Now, you just got to have a really bizarre sense of humor. And Robert, I think it's going to work out just fine for you. I've seen some of the clips you send along. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. And thanks for your participation. Thanks to those of you who support the program. Thank you so very much. You're the only reason we stay on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky this evening in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you very kindly to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.